Welcome to Session 5, Do-It-Yourself Time Travel. Now, in this session, which is really where we've been headed all along, I've taken you on quite a journey so far. We've gone into the spiritual side. We've gone into all the things you do which keep you tied into the what we might call the event realm of your life, the five fluctuations that I talked about in the very beginning session of our talk, and going through the spiritual layout of this inner mind, or floating mind, vibrational sense of time and rhythm, which is part of your life. We went through that, and then we went into the physicalness of time travel, actual devices from the rotating cylinder into the spherical time machine connected to a quantum computer, which made it jump into a sphere of large number of radii in which you can time travel backwards or forwards inside. All that was like physical stuff. Now we're going to get into the deeper sense of time that is your rhythm, your river of time, your quantum I-ness, your sense of presence. We're going to get into that. So let's, first of all, let's explore it from the outside looking in. So we'll begin by looking at what we might call psychological space-time. Now, psychology is a field which is very, in the last maybe 50 to 60 years, I may be a little more than that, has made some leaps and bounds into measurement theory. In other words, people are actually trying to make measurements which determine something about our state of consciousness or something about the psyche. In an interesting article, for example, a philosopher of mind, a noted materialist, by the way, Daniel Dennett, and his associate Marcel Kinsburn, described the number of paradoxes that are associated with the timing of conscious experience. I'm very interested in the timing of conscious experience, and I even wrote a paper about this based upon the work of Benjamin Libet, who you're going to be hearing about shortly. And this work that has been done in an attempt to try to time conscious experience, there are several kinds of experiments in which the apparent time in which things happen according to the way they're imposed on us by the outside world and the apparent time in which things happen according to our subjective awareness of these things could sometimes actually be the reverse of each other. Here's one effect that I found rather amazing that was described in the paper by Dennett and Kinsburn. This is an experiment that was done by psychologists Kullers and Van Grunau. And this is called the Phi effect or the color Phi effect. It's quite amazing when you first hear about it. Here's how it works. Suppose you have two small spots of light flashed in rapid succession on a facing wall and separated from each other by, say, 4 degrees of visual angle. That's if you were to draw a line from one eye to the first spot and then draw a line from that same eye to the second spot, the angle that would subtend, that is the angle between those two lines, would be about 4 degrees. It's important what you do here. So everything is measured. Okay, so if you were to do that, and you were to flash these spots at one after another, blup, 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 like that, it will look to you as if a single spot is moving across the screen from one location to the other. Even though nothing is actually moving, it's just flashing of one spot after the other, the brain puts this together as a continuous motion. Now you might think, well, that seems strange, but actually it's something we have gotten very used to in our culture because we watch movies. And movies are essentially the same thing. They're each frame that passes by with a slight difference from the frame before it. And that slight difference we don't perceive as a jump, which it really is. We perceive it as a continuous movement from one to the other. And if we could slow the film through the lens or through the light that's shining it on to the screen, if we could slow that film down, you would actually see one frame following another, following another, following. You wouldn't have the sense of motion. So the sense of motion seems to be a natural thing that we human beings do, that we create, even though we're creating them from still pictures. Okay, so let's say now that you do this experiment, and if you really wanted to do this at home with a flashlight shining on a wall that has a short horizontal line on it so you can keep the flash along the line, you would need to be able to flash these spots on the wall very quickly with one spot following the other in about a fifth of a second. It's very hard to do that and keep it controlled. And this is what we label the persistence of an image. We do it in sound. We do it in light. It's a very common thing that we do. Once something flashes, we have a memory of it, and that memory reverberates in some way, in the case of vision, in terms of a visual field, something we still see in our eye, and then when the next flash comes, it sort of joins or melds or just blends into the one just before it, and we sense that as a movement. Now, what Kohler and Grunau did in this next experiment is very interesting. A philosopher, Nelson Goodman, had asked them to see what would happen if they flashed the two spots in such a way that the two spots had different colors, let's say red and green. Now, what would a person perceive if you first flash red, then green, and so forth? What would you see as you watch these flashes on the screen? We might guess that the observer would no longer see this movement. Maybe would just see red, green, and just like flashing lights like on a stoplight. But maybe there's another possibility. Maybe he would see a trajectory in which the color starts out at red, but then changes gradually to orange, and then from orange on to green as it glides across the illusorial vision of the motion of the spot as it moves from one spot to the other. What is actually perceived is actually more amazing than either of those two. They did the experiment, and they were astonished to find that the apparently traveling spot remained red until it got halfway along this trajectory, which doesn't exist, and then it suddenly flipped and went green before continuing to its final location on the wall. Now, think about it a moment. The green light hadn't flashed on the wall yet, but the person perceives it as going red, then changing the green halfway between, then ending up at green on the other spot. How in all heaven's name could a person perceive that change to green when the green hadn't flashed yet? So before the green spot appears, the person presumably has no idea what it would be. It would be yellow, maybe purple, I don't know. Why green? And why would he perceive it that way? So this is kind of like a precognition, if you will, experiment. How would you explain this this trick? One way of explaining it is to say that it's an illusion and that the person really doesn't see it flash that way, but remembers it flashing that way and reports what his memory tells him. In other words, that isn't what's really happening, but it's so crazy what's really happening and impossible for the person to reconcile that the person invents a story which becomes so real that it becomes the actual story that the person sees. And this is what he remembers. Well, think about that for a moment. We're looking at reality out there. So-called real reality, that real stuff out there is very real. I mean, after all, it's there. But is it really? I mean, if we're creating stories of what's going on out there, who the heck knows what the heck is going on out there? I don't. If people are creating the story based upon random data like this, red, green, what is that saying about consciousness? Is the brain acting as a kind of a time machine? What is going on?